Hello there! This show contains material which a truly free society would neither fear nor suppress. The language and concepts contained herein will not cause eternal torment in the place where the guy with the horns and pointed stick conducts his business.
Dude.
That's me. That's my name.
You know, baseball season has started.
The pitching and catching has begun.
And the Yankees are mathematically eliminated, so that's the good news.
How is that? How did that happen?
It's the new math.
They have some sort of geometrical progression or something like that?
I don't know.
I don't know.
It's fractals.
Fractals?
Yeah.
Has something to do with covalence.
Never mind. Whoa. Actually, curtain valences is actually what it has to do with.
No. Well, the Yankees are not eliminated, but the Mets are looking that way. Pedro's Jerry Curl got in his eye, and he had to leave the game.
Pedro doesn't have the Jerry Curl anymore.
He does.
You must not have seen a recent picture of him.
It's in his bloodstream.
That's probably why he pulled the hammy.
That's right. Pedro's out. Yeah, we're talking baseball. It's spring.
We're talking baseball. Mickey and the Duke.
You know what? We should do a baseball show.
Haven't we?
Two guys who know very little about baseball talking baseball.
Okay.
We should do a cooking show, too.
We should do a show and interview someone.
Maybe. Maybe. A chef baseball player.
You know what recently came to HD on my channel selection? Food TV was just added to HD.
I would have thought that would have been HD a long time ago.
Well, it has been, but they didn't add it to the Time Warner satellite of, universe of channels or whatever you want to call it.
So now you can see Rachel Ray's perkiness in full glory.
Yeah, and here's what I have to say about HD. I think it's pretty sad when they claim there's an ABC channel in HD, which has no HD programming. I mean, not even their flagship shows like, you know, America's Home Makeover or whatever that thing is on
Lost.
Sunday night. Yeah, nothing in HD. Yet Food TV, everything in HD.
Well, what's funny is I don't watch the show that I used to watch all the time, Lost. I don't watch that anymore on television. I wait till the next day because they put the HD version of it online. So you can watch that in 720p online, but you can't watch it on television, you're saying?
Did I mention John was a wank boy?
I'm not a wank boy. What is a wank boy? Is that like gutter boy?
It's you, actually. Just look in a mirror. Yeah, there's not a lot of HD. Actually, I haven't seen any shows in HD on ABC yet, you know? And I thought for sure like their Sunday night lineup would be HD, you know, Totally Extreme Home Makeover and that Oprah Biggest give show
yeah,
or whatever it
give.
Is. Yeah. I thought for sure those would be HD. I mean, Oprah invented HD, didn't she? I mean, she and Al Gore got together and just made it happen. I mean,
I don't even know what to say.
You need HD just to see Oprah. So, I mean,
she does not fit in standard definition.
That's right. 4-3, no. 16-9, no problem.
Well, you know, she likes the donuts. I don't know what the deal is. There's no channel. There's no specific channel for ABC.
There is, except none of the programming is ever on HD. It's ABC HD, but they don't broadcast anything in HD.
What's the point?
Aren't they America's richest network or something?
What's the point, though? Do they just do the news in HD?
They do nothing in HD that I've seen so far. I just think it's kind of sad when I can turn on Mythbusters and see, you know, cute little perky redheads in HD, and I can't see Oprah in HD, which means I only see half of her.
Your TV's broken.
No, it's not broken.
It's got scratches and it's broken. It doesn't work.
You can't see the scratches so much. And I get to see the Mets in HD, which is cool.
You can see all their glorious losings in HD.
They are a 500 team, I think, as of today. Yeah.
Well, you know.
Their offense hasn't really come alive yet. They haven't really clicked yet.
But they're bums.
Their bullpen is looking good, and their starting rotation, except for the guy they paid $800 million for, is doing really well. Right now, he's 1-2.
Who is in their starting rotation these days?
John Maine.
Oh, he's back.
Yeah, he's a good pitcher. He's solid.
I thought he collapsed last year.
No. Maine was fine. Maney was fine all last year. It's the Pedro will be back. That hamstring pull wasn't nearly as bad as they were initially reporting. And of course, we have Johan Santana, who's 1-2. And, you know, last year, I think he had, last year he wasn't so stellar. But who else is in their rotation? I'm having trouble thinking of the names, but their bullpen's looking really good. But guys like Jose Reyes, you know, he's still hovering around 222 as a hitter right now. Yeah, he hasn't come alive yet. And until those guys come alive, you know, the Mets run scoring machine really won't come alive.
Yeah.
But I'm not worried about it. I mean, you know, I feel confident the Mets bats are going to come alive. They've got this guy named Angel Pagan, who's replacing the left fielder who I can't think of right now. He had a what do you call it when you get that injury that they got to fix?
Oblique?
No. They actually have to go in your gut and like use like staples and mesh to pick it up, you know, the
hernia.
Yeah, he had a hernia operation and he's still recovering from that. The main left fielder whose name I can't remember. So they've got this guy that did great in spring training whose name is Angel Pagan. And it just occurred to me, you know, I guess if you're, you know, you come from a Latin culture and you're very Roman Catholic, which I'm sure they are, and you have the last name of Pagan, your parents would assign you the first name Angel to offset.
Counteract it.
Counteract the last name. And if he has
a sister.
You
must get rid of bad mojo.
That's right. And if he has a sister, I'm sure his name is Angela, you know, or right. Angela, as they would say. But he's doing great. He's hitting like 400 so far this season. He's leading the Mets in RBIs. And I mean, the Mets have like 3 home runs all year so far, you know, and they're a pretty powerful team with Delgado and Wright and the center fielder. And I mean, you know, they're just not clicking yet, the offense, but I'm not worried about it. Oh, and by the way, coming soon.
This is not a sports show. And we're just
it's not.
People.
Coming soon to a theater near you, we will have Floyd Landis news because his final appeal is over as John rolls his eyes. We haven't talked about this in
a year.
No,
I'm not rolling my eyes. I'm just sort of taking a little nap in my head here waiting for the news to pass.
Yeah, we will have a lot like that kidney stone.
Right.
We will have some Floyd Landis news pending the arbiter is going over all of the evidence right now.
Has he submitted like his entire kidney for inspection?
Yeah.
Please take my liver. Take a look at the contents of it. There's no extra limbs or appendages growing from it.
Take my liver, please. Ba-dum-bum.
All right, please. Floyd Landis, we must end it.
Yeah, well, you know,
We have a moratorium on Floyd Landis news right now.
Well, we will have some news to report, though, and who knows what it'll be. But you know what the other strange news is in the Tour de France this year? And it's
so
arbitrary, it's pissing me off. The Team Discovery last year had the winner and the number 3 guy. You know, they had the Spaniard who came in first, and I'm having trouble remembering names today. And then, of course, they had Levi Leipheimer who came in third, the American. Alberto Contador was the guy who came in first. And what ended up happening was the director sportif from Team Discovery, Johan Brunel, was going to retire, but he got asked to go over to Team Astana, which was that Kazakh team, which had a couple of dopers on it that got caught last year.
And one guy wearing a lime green thong.
Yeah, kind of, as they went over the mountain, yeah. And anyway, so what they did was they completely got rid of everybody on the team, and they revamped it top to bottom, and they hired Johan Brunel, former Team Discovery, Lance's old boss, if you will, to head up the team, and they brought in a whole new team of cyclists, including Contador and Leipheimer, who were number 1 and number 3 in last year's Tour de France. And the governing body of the Tour de France said, yeah, we know it's a whole new team, and none of the people who are on the team this year were accused of any doping, but we're just going to ban the team from the Tour de France this year anyway. So basically, the guy who finished first and the guy who finished third in last year's Tour de France are arbitrarily being told they can't race in the race. So it's just so stupid.
Just because of a wisp of a suspicion.
No suspicion, just because all the guys who on last year's team, who aren't on it anymore, got caught. You know, they've literally completely remanned the team with completely new people, and yet they're still telling them they can't ride.
That is definitely guilt by association.
It's totally arbitrary, and it's stupid. I won't even watch the Tour this year. I mean, it's just dumb.
Talk about stupid things. Something I forgot to mention last week that I heard about on the news.
Mm-hmm.
Again, another one of those silly news things. There's a guy out in California who won a case that he's been fighting for like 7 years or something. And he's got solar panels on his house. And
Ed Begley?
No, but he's probably... Junior? His entire house is made of solar panels. And he's got solar panels on his house, on the roof of his house, and his neighbor has trees, which are blocking his solar panel, right? So he's been fighting to have the neighbor cut the trees down because under California law, there's apparently some law that says no neighbor can essentially block someone else's solar panels. There's like this direct line of the sun that you have rights to. It's very odd. But anyways, he finally won, and the neighbor has to cut his trees down. Now, get this. The trees are mature redwoods.
Oh, hey.
So this is like...
Was there a Flintstones pedal-powered car involved in this at all?
Funny. Well, it was funny because the guy who I heard...
That was a reference
the news,
to John's favorite website, by the way. Well, which has a very broad subject matter.
We're not talking about broad anymore. So the punchline to this is this guy's desire to... work towards the betterment of the natural environment will no longer be impeded by the natural environment.
Yeah, they're going to cut down the 900-year-old sequoia, so this guy's solar panel.
Yeah,
don't move the solar panels. Cut down the redwood.
Or even better, you know what? Don't choose to have the solar panels put on a different house or move your house.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Move the panel. I mean...
Move. Or how about this? Just give up the fact that the solar panels are going to not be as efficient as you want them to be because you've got something better in the world, like trees that are older than God or close
to it.
Well,
not really. Not if you're a God believer.
Close to it.
Nothing is older than God.
900 years old?
That's
pretty damn old.
Yeah, that's old. It's older than me. It's, you know... Not as old as your mom.
If I had...
We never say mother jokes here, so I thought we had to get one in there.
Your mom is so black. This is one of my favorites.
My mom's not black.
I know, but this is one of my favorites. I looked on a website, your mama jokes. Your mom is so black. When she attends night school, they mark her absent.
Wow.
This is hysterical stuff. Anyways, so the thing that kills me is if I had 900-year-old or even 100-year-old redwoods on my property, I'd go to, you know, whatever the town or the whatever government there is and declare my land a national monument. That's amazing stuff.
Yeah, I love those trees. They're cool.
They're huge.
Apparently
they block all sorts of sunlight.
They block solar panels. They're known for that. For many hundreds of years,
they've been
solar panel blockers.
They're ruffians.
We are the knights. I don't know. You want to play a song?
I'm going to play some music to end this tirade.
All right, let's check it out.
We'll be right back.
when you thought it was safe to go outside.
In our never-ending quest to bring you inaccessible, challenging music that was biffed.
With Criminal.
Criminal.
That was biffed.
Not unlike the trees, which are blocking people's panels. They're criminals.
Wow. That was quite a stretch right there.
It wasn't a stretch. Because I think that that's what the judge actually declared, is that those trees are unlawful trees.
You're in contempt.
The trees were in contempt of California law.
There was this judge, and Rod Serling was there, and there was this judge in a very tall, behind a very tall bench, and he said, "Trees, you're obsolete."
Right. And the tree said, "What? We've been here like before you guys were even walking upright."
You know, speaking of before you guys were even walking upright, you know, I saw this.
What a non sequitur. What a segue.
Well, no, this is, you know, talking about what comes before what and sort of the entitlement and arrogance of the human race. You know, at work the other day, there was a TV show on one of those, you know, video shows where people send in their home videos and stuff.
America's funniest home.
No, it wasn't.
Crotch smackings.
That's right. Here, watch me hit the golf ball, Dad.
Right.
No, this was more one of the shocking video ones. Yeah. You know?
Oh, when wild animals go wild,
something like that. Yeah. So this mom bear was looking for her cub, and the bear ended up like wandering into, you know, the town, if you will, and people started getting nervous and they started scaring the bear away, and it ended up climbing up a telephone pole to like the very top. And they had found the cub.
This is not going
to
end good. I know that.
Animal control had found the cub. And the bear was up on top of the pole for like an hour. And, you know, how much longer would you really think it would have been before the bear got tired and came down and they could have just drugged it, right? So while the bear was at the top of the pole, what does the animal control officer decide to do?
Shoot it.
Yeah, shoot it. Well, tranquilizer. Shoot it with a tranquilizer.
So that it falls and dies.
Yeah, so that it falls. And I'm thinking to myself, and I'm going to swear here, what the freak were they thinking? What person could possibly imagine that the right thing to do is to drug an animal when it's 50 feet up in the air so that it's going to fall and potentially kill itself? I don't get that. You know, what possible logic was applied there?
There is none.
Exactly. So what ended up happening was the bear was really amped up. It took an hour for the sedative to take effect because the bear was really amped up and running on adrenaline or whatever after being chased around and whatnot and climbing to the top of the pole.
And scared to death.
Yeah. So it finally falls, and on the way down, it shorts out a transformer. Its paw got stuck in a transformer. So the transformer didn't burst into flames or anything, but part of the animal got burned. And then the animal, of course, splats down on the ground, and it doesn't die, thankfully. The animal didn't die. And they brought it to the local animal hospital, and they, you know, fixed him up, and then they released the mom and the cub back into the wild. But again, I mean, I if I were there, I would have punched that guy. I mean, you know, all these people were like, "Oh, these bad animals are intruding on our land here." Well, no. Again, we're intruding on their land. They were here first. Or at least concurrently.
I think there's a middle ground there, too, to be found. You know, it's not like it's their land, it's our land.
It's a coffee joke, right? Middle ground?
It's true. It's shared land, and we got to figure out how to, you know, realize that we're having an impact on them. They're not the intruder. He comes up, climbs the pole, is scared to death. How about
waiting it out? Was it going to kill you to wait it out?
Right. No.
Yeah, tell everybody to go home, wait it out, get a couple of guys a tranquilizer gun so that when he does come down, hit him twice. Whatever you got to do to actually so he's not a danger or a threat to anyone.
Or even better, instead of shooting with a tranquilizer that knocks him out, shoot him with a tranquilizer that calms him down so that maybe he'll come down on his own when he's more relaxed.
Is that like the date rape drug you use?
Yeah. Called roofies.
But anyway, yeah, I was very angry. Thankfully, there was one sane person in the crowd who started screaming at the top of her lungs about what a really bad choice it was. And, you know, for me, decision-making and choices are... I spend a lot of time thinking about the choices I make in my life. And I spend a lot of time thinking in general.
Should I stay or should I go?
Those kinds of things. Yeah, exactly.
If I stay...
I quote The Clash.
If I stay, there will be trouble. Perhaps if I leave, there will be double. I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah, I think about that kind of stuff all the time. So I'm constantly amazed by people who don't think. They don't put any thought into the choices that they make. And to me, shooting an animal that you're trying to save at the top of a 50-foot telephone pole so that it could potentially fall, burst into flames on the way down, and die when it impacts the earth, that's a bad choice.
Not unlike putting solar panels on your house to save the environment and needing to remove some trees to save said environment.
Yeah, I had to kill a couple of grizzlies for my solar panels myself, actually. So
I'm all for the environment, and I'm going to go spend some time in the Arctic, but first I need to kill some animals and get their fur so that I can survive in the Arctic.
Do you have a club so that I may hit this seal in the head?
Yeah, you know what you're going to do? You're going to take the mother seal, turn her into a club, and kill the baby seal.
Actually, I'm going to find a Navy SEAL, and I'm going to have him hit that guy in the head.
Jesse the Body Ventura.
I know. I have a friend who's a Navy SEAL. His name is Jim. And you know what? I wouldn't mess with him.
I prefer to get Jesse the Governor Ventura. He's
a
Navy
SEAL.
He was on
Larry King last week.
Was he?
Yeah, talking about the whole election thing with Hillary and Obama and whatnot. And I missed it, actually.
Oh,
I tuned
boy.
In late.
Like I'm going to listen to him about the election.
Actually, I like him. He's got a lot of sensible ideas, actually.
Brother! That's the
no,
other guy.
No, that's like...
that's Hulk Hogan.
Or were you doing Randy the Macho Man?
No, I was doing Hulk Hogan.
Okay. You know, I heard a rumor that the Hulk went on Larry King recently, and apparently the Hulk's wife filed for divorce, and Hulk didn't hear about it, and he got the bad news from Larry while he was actually on the show, and somebody told me that actually happened. Hulk had no idea.
Wow.
And then Larry goes, "Hulk, what do you think about your wife filing for divorce?" And he goes, "Huh?"
He pulls like a Scooby-Doo.
Yeah, that's a little crazy. I looked for that footage on YouTube, and it's not there, by the way.
Talk about bad decision-making. What about Hulk's son?
Well, he's full of bad choices.
Mr. Drifter.
Well, A, anybody who chooses to drift at all, even if you can do it, it's a bad choice. And then B, street racing and nearly killing your best friend in a car is a bad choice, too.
Yeah.
So anyway,
look that up.
What are we talking about?
Hulk Hogan's son.
What's this new theme, this new concept you have?
All right, so I've got this concept. We're going conceptual.
Stolen.
This is like
stolen.
Art. This is like conceptual stolen. Art. This is like an art movement.
John's giving me jazz hands over here.
I'm doing jazz hands. So here's the deal. I'm not above stealing. If it's a good idea, steal. You know, the whole top five thing? Stolen.
Yeah, that's true.
So this is another idea. I saw on Comedy Central, I was telling this to Rich. They've got this concept of debates. You know, they're taking and they stole the idea of a debate. They're going to take a debate and they're going to try to determine what's the root of all evil. So they put two concepts against each other, two things against each other, and saying which is more evil. And they have two comedians debate it. So I figured, you know, let's steal that idea instead, because we talk about lots of crap. Let's come up with a concept, an idea, a thing, a theme, and you and I will take opposing positions as we usually do.
John, you ignorant slut.
Right. And the thing that came to mind immediately was a discussion we've had offline here, well, online for us, but offline for you guys, about bowling. We've been talking about bowling.
Well, we have talked about it online a couple of weeks ago or last week or something. No, 2 weeks ago.
Did we? I think we mentioned it because we had to, because it was top of mind.
Well, I've been talking about it in the context of the
Ridiculous.
Big Lebowski.
Right. Well, the thing is, Rich said, hey, let's go bowling, just off the cuff. He said, hey, let's go bowling.
Yeah, and it
jokingly.
Really, yeah, it wasn't that I actually wanted to go bowling, because deep down in my heart, I don't want to go bowling. But I said,
he does.
Dude.
All Polish people want to bowl.
I said, dude, let's go bowling. I was hoping he'd get the Big Lebowski reference, but instead he said, I want to be John Turturro and polish my ball.
No, I said, bowling is awesome. So here's the deal. We're going to have a little debate. Every once in a while, kind of like our top five theme, I think it would be a good idea to have a debate. You take the opposing, because, you know, you're very contrarian, and I'll take the pro, on this issue at least. Bowling. Shoot. Why do you hate it so much, you hater?
I don't hate it as much as I just dislike it intensely.
What's wrong with bowling? I'll give you 5 seconds and then I'll respond.
I need more than 5 seconds. But in the abstract, there's really nothing wrong with bowling, but it's like golf to me. You know, it's one of these sort of like fake sports that you don't sweat. And for me, like, a sport is like something you have to sweat doing.
Are you kidding me? This is my rebuttal. Are you kidding me?
No.
Have you seen some of the guys bowling? They're sweating standing still.
They'd sweat in a snowstorm, so it doesn't matter.
That's right. These guys, it has nothing to do with sweating. But if you're saying that there's no physical exertion.
Yeah, it's kind of what I'm saying.
Well, I'm okay. I'm not claiming that bowling's a sport. I'm claiming that bowling is fun.
Okay.
And bowling should be done.
We
should have bowl-a-thon. Bowl-a-thon. We should have a bowl-a-thon that goes like from 8 o'clock at night until 4 o'clock in the morning the next day. We should be bowling constantly.
And by we, you mean?
Everyone. humanity.
I don't have a lot of ammo for the anti-bowling thing because, again, it's not like, you know, something that I... It's something that I
so
just...
So you admit that your position is futile.
No, it's not futile, nor is it futile, but... Or feudal. Yeah, I'm not sure that I have a lot here because I have bowled. I have a cousin who's a pro bowler, was a pro bowler. It's just something that I don't enjoy. And, you know, any sport where 20 feet over your shoulder, you can go and get a beer again. Well, not a sport. And I know you're not claiming it's a sport.
Wait a minute. I'm not claiming it's a sport, but I'm saying that's one of the benefits. You're saying it's a bad thing. I'm saying it's an awesome thing. I think everyone should have a mullet and go bowling and have fried foods and beer 20 feet away from them.
Well, and they can, which is the beauty of bowling.
And they should.
Which is why I'm not like big into bowling.
But in all seriousness, I think bowling is awesome.
Awesome?
And I'm using that term because it's very 80s. It's awesome because bowling has spawned some of the most culturally significant items in our lifetime.
Such as?
The bowling shirt.
I like the bowling shirt. I'll give you that.
And the bowling shoes.
I actually do like the style of bowling shoes, just not on an alley, for example. Not actually, you know, outside of the bowling alley, both of those things are good.
And the overhead projector. Do you remember in the bowling alleys, we talked about this, they used to have overhead projectors. Basically, it was just one of those mirrors that had a lamp behind it, and you'd stick a little cellophane thing and you'd run a wax pencil and you'd have to actually do the math and keep score by yourself, which, you know, after 7 or 8 beers, everyone's got like 400 scores. But now it's all electronic and it's still overhead.
I'm not sure what I have to say about that.
It's amazing. Bowling has spawned fashion, technology, and fried foods of all sorts.
Fashion, technology, and fried foods. Well, I do like some fried foods. You know, for example, wait a minute.
Come on, think of one.
French fries.
French fries. The freedom fry?
I like French fries, although I can't necessarily have foods, French fries fried in a public restaurant, if you will, because there may have been something breaded that was fried in that oil earlier in the day.
And see, you're anti-breaded thing.
The gluten would leach out of the breaded product that they fried earlier and into the oil, and then would leach into the oil from the oil into the fry.
Something that I'm hoping that someone will perfect someday is the fried pizza. I really want them to bread and fry a pizza.
Now, I want to go back to the days. I'll go bowling if there are manual pin setters and we have to do the scoring by hand.
We can do the scoring by hand. I don't know about the manual pin setters.
My dad was a pin setter as like a high school guy. He made money working at a bowling alley as a pin setter.
Wow.
Back in like the 50s or whatever, whenever he would have been.
Did he go to sock hops too?
I have no idea.
Because it's like the same era.
He probably did. He would occasionally drag race and do those kinds of things on Genesee Street. And,
did he wear white t-shirts with cigarettes rolled up in the sleeve?
Probably. He was a bowler. My dad liked to bowl.
Bowling is a cool thing because you get to throw heavy things at not so heavy things and make them fall down.
I'd much rather build a trebuchet. That basically describes the exact same thing. And yet for me, sounds like more fun. Is more fun.
Yeah, but there's no scorekeeping in trebuchet.
Oh, but there is. We could invent some scorekeeping. Well, first of all, you knock it over. Some sort of points are involved there, right? You know?
I don't know.
Over the thing if you hit the thing you're aiming at,
there's all sorts
that's
of
a huge
planning
point.
In trebuchet. Bowling you can do at the spur of the moment.
Yeah, you could. We would need to build a siege engine to
actually have to build the It's like Steve Martin's joke about being a millionaire. First, get a trebuchet.
That's right.
Jeez, we can't do that. Although, I do have a bowling ball.
I don't have it. Is it a 16-pounder?
I think mine's a 14-pounder.
Is 14 or 16 the legal limit? You know, being the bowling man would know that number.
I don't know any rules of bowling. Are you kidding me? What's the point? You've got electronic scoring now. You don't have to know any rules. It's all about fun.
Now, do you when you bowl, do you use the markings on the lane or do you look at the pins and throw it? Do you go by the...
It's pure anger. I look at the pins as if they're the enemy.
I'm not talking about your marriage. I'm talking about bowling.
I have a technique which is unorthodox.
Please.
I'm like Fred Twinkletoes Flintstone.
Yes. Yes, of course.
Actually, I'm not like the typical bowler that you see like in the television where they throw the ball and it curves. I throw the ball sort of like straight at the pins. I'm a no-nonsense bowler.
You got no hook?
I don't have a hook.
Huh. Yeah, I don't need do you go by the markings on the lanes and try to shoot through those little arrow thingies?
Oh, yeah, for consistency.
Yeah. So you're looking at the arrows. You're not really looking at the
well,
pins.
You look at the pins and you look at the arrows and you figure out and you throw one ball and you figure out, you know, where is my arm going tonight?
Mm-hmm.
And then if it's going a little bit too left, too right, you make adjustments.
Hmm.
Not a lot of science involved. I mean, there is beer.
Which I can't have. So again, you know, we're going
but
to
we
a place.
But we can bring wine.
We're going to a place that I can't eat or drink. And you claim that's a huge, you know, part of the activity, and yet I can't partake. So all I have, all I'm left with is the ball and the alley.
And there's nothing wrong with either. And some pins.
There's some pins. And you know what? You know, okay, you can get me bowling if you can guarantee me that on the lane either to our left or our right, there'll be some hot chicks.
Well, there's always hot chicks. It depends on your yeah. definition of hot, and it depends on how many beers you've had.
Well, for me, the beer thing would probably be zero.
Well, I can't guarantee any hot chicks, but I can definitely guarantee other bowlers. You know there's bowling etiquette?
Yeah, you can't bowl. You have to wait for the other guy to roll first. I know that one. Like, you know.
Yeah.
You don't bowl at the same time to the guy in the lane next
to you. Don't
want
to distract him and possibly ruin his score, which is absolutely pointless.
Yeah.
Keeping score is kind of silly. I mean, if you're in a
league. If we bowl, yeah, we shouldn't keep score.
Well, the machine does that. If you're in a league, I can understand keeping score and all that. But, you know, if you're just going out to have fun and partake in the boiled in oil food, I don't think there's a point to keeping score.
I'm still a billiards guy.
You're still. Well, here's the thing. What we're going to do, and this is something else that I proposed, that we should have the Bloody Veg kind of on location recording. We should go bowling and record a show because bowling sort of is conducive to discussion because
it's almost like a salon or a debate.
It kind of
bowling
is.
Bowling often is.
Well, because it
only if John Goodman is there telling the rat-faced actor to shut the F up.
Well, the reason why I say this is because it's one of those sports, quote unquote sports, where you shoot the ball and then you sit down for maybe 10, 15 minutes while other people are bowling. So there's other stuff to do. You have to figure out what you're going to do. It's kind of like baseball where you're sitting in the dugout for a while when it's your turn to bat. You know, we could definitely record a show at a bowling alley. The ambient sounds would be awesome.
Well, the ambience would be good.
Ambience.
No doubt about it.
And I'm sure if we get some drunkards, there's definitely going to be more ambience.
Drunkards. Shouldn't be hard at a bowling alley, by the way.
Where could we find a good bowling alley? Oh, there's like a half a dozen of them between me and you.
Well, except for the one that burned down. And they finally tore it down, by the way. They ripped down the rotting carcass of that bowling alley.
Well, there's
the
a
one in Oneida.
There's a bowling alley that's almost walking distance from where
is
I live.
Is that the one you were talking about?
We can go there. We can go someplace
What's
in Utica.
What's the one you were claiming was the favorite one?
My favorite one is actually farther for you because it's more west. It's the Flamingo Bowl.
That definitely sounds like a place you'd like to be. I don't know why.
It's an awesome. And again, I use that term on purpose.
Play
it's
a lot of Ricky Martin there. Is that why you like
it? Most everything at the Flamingo Bowl is neon.
Hey, I've been at a bowling alley like that. That was also a pool hall when I was in Anaheim. They had like strobes and, you know, neon. It was actually kind of wild. So wait a minute. We're going to a concert soon. Actually,
we already went to a concert.
Yeah, as of the taping of the show, we went. Anyway,
I don't have anything to say about it. My mind is a blank. I don't remember any of it.
I'm going back 26 years to April of 1982 when I saw the band Asia live at the Stanley Theater on their first world tour. So John and I are going to see them again very soon at a local Indian casino. And John's wife's going too.
Yep.
And it should be fun. And they're doing a live webcast. So
you may have already seen us.
And you can hear us.
This is weird. This is like we're talking in the past tense, in the future. Weird.
Don't worry about it.
Our time machine is like off kilter. That's what the problem is.
You want to play a tune?
Yeah, I'm going to play that tune.
All right, let's check it out.
Thank you.
I really like that guy's playing.
Who was that guy?
That is Pierre Bonsoussan, and he's a Frenchman, actually. He's a finger-style steel string guitarist, and he plays in the Dadgad tuning, D-A-D-G-A-D. It's a non-standard guitar tuning, and I've known about him for quite a while, probably 20 years, and on the same CD that I discovered Simon Fox, this song was on it. And I hadn't heard this track, but what impresses me about Pierre Bonsoussan's playing is that he gets his guitar to sound like a symphony. He's so connected to his instrument. And that's like one of the great things about the guitar as an instrument. You know, you're actually touching the strings as opposed to a piano where like there's this mechanism between you and the strings. You know, mm-hmm. there's a key and a, you know, a lever and a hammer.
Pulleys and
yeah,
hamsters.
Yep, there's a lot of that. But the guitar is such a unique instrument because you're actually touching... You're in contact with the things that are creating the sounds, and that allows you to manipulate the sounds and be really in touch with your instrument. And Bonsoussan's playing is just so connected to his guitar. I'm just blown away by the guy every time I hear him. And I reached out to his management company and asked if we could play this. Not PodSafe, by the way. This is totally a copyrighted tune, but they did give us permission to play that, and I'm a little bit excited. Yeah, actually, I don't think we've been turned down yet. We've been ignored, exactly. I've asked permission to play tunes by people and have been ignored, but I've never actually had anybody reply that has replied and said no.
We haven't gotten a cease and desist letter yet either.
We haven't gotten that yet, which is
always
a good sign.
I would love to get one of those.
That would be fun, because we could put it up at the bowling alley.
You know what I love about cease and desist letters?
We could put it up over the deep fryer.
Right next to the first dollar.
Exactly, their first dollar. Right. And not just bowling alleys have that, though. I mean,
most small businesses, most retail fried
food. In many ways,
businesses.
We could put up our first dollar, because there was a time when we were earning income on the Google AdSense things and everything.
Not much. It was that income was outgoing very quickly as well.
But we must have made a dollar at some point.
We are not in the black, we'll put it that way.
Yeah, and actually, we were talking about it last week, but one of the things John and I have always fantasized, for lack of a better word, of doing with this show is somehow generating some revenue. We don't know how. We're still wondering about the whole monetization of podcasts, and that's a big topic with these two brothers that John used to listen to.
Some other brothers.
Yeah.
They're from another planet.
That's right. Yeah. We're back!
Well, you know, I was thinking about giving blood, but that doesn't really go very far.
So I'm going to talk really briefly about a film I saw last night, and it was actually a film from Spain, and it was called The Orphanage, El Orfanato. And
It's a hard knock life.
I never read these things that the Munson Williams Proctor Institute hands out before the films, because I don't want to know. I don't want to give away any plot, you know.
They don't have any spoiler alerts.
Yeah. I don't want any spoilers, and so I never read the things they hand out. And if I had read this, I would have known the answer to the question that I had upon leaving the film.
What the hell happened?
Yeah, well, this film takes place at an orphanage, and a woman who actually was raised at this orphanage as a youth, she marries like some rich doctor, not unlike Seinfeld's wife. Her main skill in life is picking a wealthy husband.
That's right.
And they decide to buy the orphanage that she was raised in much later in life, and they have already adopted one son. So
keeps
the
business in the family.
They've adopted an orphan child, and they were thinking about opening it up kind of as a home for handicapped children. And what ends up happening is her son disappears. And for months, he's been talking about invisible friends and all kinds of weird stuff. And
spooky.
And it is spooky. And this, despite being a very scary film, is a very sweet and tender film. I've never quite... The last scene in this film was so heartwarming, and yet I've never seen a wee, kind of a scary film that had any sort of heartwarming aspects to it at all. So for me, this film
wasn't heartwarming the way that he was wearing a sweater.
No, the guy with the glove with the slasher fingers on it. Yeah, not very heartwarming. I'm not a fan of the horror genre in general. I mean, I would make an exception for films like The Birds and, you know, films made by, what's his name? Help me out.
Hitchcock.
Yeah, because they're not like Halloween.
Thrillers more.
They're thrillers, yeah. But scary films never really, or even a film like the great Kubrick film, which was, The Shining, which kind of entered the horror genre, you know, but yet not really. And I forget, you totally threw me a curveball, and I forgot where I'm going with this, but
Orphanage, Little Orphan Annie.
Orphanage, that's right. And yeah, I don't know where I was going there. Oh, I was going to talk about the weird connection I made. Mm-hmm. As I left the film, I thought, well, that's interesting. I mean, heck, wasn't it just last year that a film out of Spain called Pan's Labyrinth had a really similar vibe to this? And then upon reading the piece of paper that they actually give me before seeing the film, it turns out that the producer of this film, Guillermo del Toro, of course, directed Pan's Labyrinth. So there was a connection. So I can see, you know, the vibe, the similarities were clear, you know.
You know what Guillermo del Toro is translated to?
I do, actually.
Bill the Bull.
Yeah.
Bill of the Bull.
Yeah, that's very good.
The Bull's Bill.
You're very smart. Shut up.
Bull Bill. Sorry.
And, I mean, this movie did have its scary moments. So, I mean, there were people screaming in the theater at some of the surprises in this film. Yeah,
did you wear 3D glasses?
No, it was not in 3D. But I will say that there were quite a few surprises in the film, and there were quite a few interesting plot twists as well, because I don't want to really give anything away about the film, because we learned some interesting things about one of the caretakers, one of the social workers who worked at the orphanage when the woman who was an adult who bought the home lived there as a child. And she ends up sort of, what's the word I want? You know, she ends up not through hypnosis or anything, but ends up remembering a lot of things that she had forgotten about this place. And it ends up being quite an interesting tale with many surprises. So I think... I think
Darth Vader being her father?
Yep.
Was that one of them?
Yeah, that's actually one of them. And
sorry, we should put a spoiler alert on this.
Yeah, no, I'm not going to do any spoilers at all. But for a guy who doesn't like scary movies, I enjoyed this film. And I didn't know it was going to be scary either, because what I had heard about it, sort of like just perusing the internet a little bit, it was that it was sweet and was about a woman who showed great love for her child. And I wasn't expecting there to be, you know, those scary moments, but there were a few pretty scary moments in this film. But, you know, great film. I enjoyed it to death.
It's rare that I would have to agree with you, but I, for some reason, as I get older, I do not like scary movies. I just don't see the point to them.
For me, they're stressful, actually. It's a stressful thing, and I don't like to be stressed out. And I actually was stressed in watching this film, because I didn't know it was going to be scary, but I mean, there were moments where you were like, whoa, you know, you were just terrified for the merest of moments.
Yeah, I don't need to be scared. There are a lot of scary things in life that I have to confront every day. Well, I don't need film and my entertainment to be thrown that at me.
Yeah, and you know, for a parent, you know, the idea of the loss of a child or the loss of many children, which is what we end up finding out happened at this orphanage at one time.
Damn it, Vader.
They killed the younglings. That's right. At the Jedi Temple.
Is that what happened? Anakin got loose again?
that bastard, you know? He went out and he's so much anger.
Well, you know, he has to keep that anger in check.
He does, yeah.
Anyway. You know what he has to use to keep that anger in check?
Tell me. Well, wait a minute. Don't hit that yet. You know what? I do want to just say briefly. Directed by Juan Antonio Bayon, 2007, a Spanish film, rated R, 100 minutes. And, of course, it's subtitled because in Spain they speak Spanish. In the vosotros form, actually.
They're so snobbish that way.
I know. It's like the French.
You know
Except
what?
Except they don't speak French in Spain.
Take a guess.
What? Something. There it is. Two shows in the last couple of weeks that have gone into the 50-minute range. I'm mortified.
We're pushing for 60.
Because we're going to get... our hope is to be paid by the minute, so soon we're going to be releasing like four-hour shows.
Well, you know, that's what we're hoping. We can't get paid for like the 10-minute shows, the 20-minute shows. We've tried the 40, and now we're in the 50s. Yeah. We're hoping that eventually someone will say, wait a minute, these guys are pushing 90, 120 minutes. Let's start paying them.
Anyway, this is Rich Wilgus.
John Tellerico.
You've been listening to the Bloodthirsty Vegetarians. Check us out on the web, www.bloodyveg.com.
Send us feedback, please. We're lonely. Feedback at bloodyveg.com.
And check out the forum, bloodyveg.com/forum. Have fun. And remember, you're listening to The VIB.